Talk Some NFL. We're joined right now by a senior NFL reporter and an insider for CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. He is also part of Tops on CBS Sports Network. He previously worked for the Charlotte Observer and was a national NFL writer at Sports Illustrated. He is Jonathan Jones. Jonathan, what's going on, man? How are you?
Jim, I'm doing well, man. Appreciate you having me on again.
Always good to have you on. Good to talk some ball with you. All right, let me start with Bill O'Brien. Jonathan, he was fired in Houston. Let me start with this. How much of the problem in your mind was Bill O'Brien the coach, and how much of the issue was Bill O'Brien the GM?
Yeah, I think it was actually a little bit of both, and one contributed to the other. You know, with the coach, with the leadership, with the power and responsibility, he has a legendary temper. Everybody in Houston knew that, and when you're winning AFC South division titles, everyone can kind of deal with it, right? It's that classic maxim that it, as long as you're winning, as long as there's success, no one really kind of cares what sort of pain in the butt you are. But then they start 0-4, and that they started 0-2 against the Chiefs and the Ravens, so be it. That they didn't beat the Steelers in Week 3, all right. You don't want to lose the Vikings in Week 4, but it wasn't just that they started 0-4. It wasn't just the collapse in the playoffs back in January. It was not getting enough for Jadeveon Clowney in the trade when he was, of course, installed as the GM. It was giving up way too much in order to get Laremy Tunsil, and then, of course, you're forced to pay him as the highest-paid left tackle in the NFL. It was giving up DeAndre Hopkins for a bag of peanuts, and then, of course, hiding behind, as he did yesterday, the idea that, well, you know, not everyone understands what's going on behind the walls of an organization. Listen, I have two eyes, so do you. You know that DeAndre Hopkins is a top two wide receiver in the NFL, arguably the best in the league, and the fact that you can't get a first-round draft pick for him, no matter what his contract demands are, no matter what you may or may not like about him, is irresponsible. And so you add all that stuff up with an 0-4 record, with him rubbing a lot of players the wrong way. Yeah, I understand why he's been shown the door.
Jonathan Jones joining us. By the way, it's that point that you just made. Like, where the hell was he going with that? This whole notion of y'all don't know what goes on behind the walls here. You'll never understand that. Exactly where was he going with a statement like that?
Well, I think he was trying to allude to the fact that he had information about that trade and about other trades that he has made that the public doesn't know, and because he did the research, because he has that information, we do not, he made the right decision. I can tell you that just about every general manager or head coach who has been fired probably a little bit earlier than they would have liked to usually uses that line. So I was not surprised that he used that line. But again, track record speaks for itself.
Right. So you also made the point that Cal McNair gave him too much control. Exactly why did Cal do that?
Well, he's a new owner. Of course, he took over for his father after he passed away, and he kind of looked around and decided, all right, Bill O'Brien should be our GM. And, you know, Bill O'Brien didn't want to go in yesterday into whether or not he lobbied for that job or whether it was handed to him. It sort of takes me back to 2000, where it's, you know, Dick Cheney leading the vice presidential, search. And it's like, well, actually, I might be the guy for it. That's what it always felt like to me with Bill O'Brien in Texas. And now we see that he was just given too much control, too much power. There was not a system of checks and balances. It worked out very well when Rick Smith was the GM. You know, they obviously butted heads. There's not many people in the organization Bill O'Brien didn't butt heads with. All of those things said, though, still hard to argue with his results on the field. He was a winning coach with a lot of division titles, like we mentioned earlier. And so I absolutely do believe he's going to get another job in the NFL, maybe not in 2021, but soon enough he will be installed as a head coach again. And, you know, he just shouldn't have the GM title along with it.
We're talking to Jonathan Jones. Now, Jonathan, whoever gets that job, I mean, there are a lot of questions about that job and what you get with that job. But you do get Deshaun Watson. But for some reason, there's this suggestion that maybe Dabo Swinney might leave Clemson to reunite with Deshaun. How likely is that in your mind?
I cannot see Dabo Swinney leaving Clemson for the NFL. And it's absolutely no shade whatsoever at Dabo. He's just a better college coach. And I think that we have seen any number of times that a lot of college coaches who have tried to make the jump to the NFL, a lot of NFL coaches who have tried to make the jump to college, and it just has not worked for whatever reason. And Dabo is a guy who, for 18 to 22-year-olds, guys that he can sort of control, that he can, mentor, that he can watch and help them mature, that he can run the program exactly how he wants to. And, of course, he's a king down in Clemson and in that area. And so why would you give that up? Okay, maybe he'll give that up once Nick Saban retires and go to Alabama. Obviously, that has looked less likely over the last 2 or 3 years, far less likely than it did, in, let's say, 2016 or so, when that certainly would have been his dream job. I'm not saying that Dabo Swinney will retire an 80-year-old head coach in Clemson, but it's really, really hard for me to see him making a move to the NFL, whether or not he has Deshaun Watson on the team or not.
Jonathan Jones is joining us. All right, Jonathan, what about last night? Let me ask you about the Patriots. What do you make of the Patriots' decision to start Brian Hoyer last night?
It's difficult because it does speak a little bit to how Jared Stidham, how they did not believe Jared Stidham was ready. However, of the two quarterbacks the Patriots played last night, very little doubt in my mind that Jared Stidham was the better of the two. Now, you look at a stat line and you see the two interceptions. One was a Julian Edelman drop, so that's not on him. The second one, there's 4 or 5 minutes left to play. The guy's trying to make a play, and he gets intercepted. Meanwhile, Brian Hoyer was costing the team when they could have gone up on the Chiefs early on, of course. Took 3 points off the board early when he took a sack, when he had no timeouts. He has to know the situation. And then, of course, costing up the ball again down there in the red zone. So it could have been 9-6 with Brian Hoyer. He was killing the team. Meanwhile, Jared Stidham comes in, and he marches them down the field, makes a couple of mistakes, but very clearly to me, he was the better option of the two last night at the end of the night. I guess the Patriots didn't see that in practice. And, of course, Stidham was dealing with a hip injury back in August. Hasn't really been given that much, that many opportunities. But I don't really read too much into it, whether they picked the wrong guy or not. I didn't think that they were going to beat the Chiefs one way or the other. I don't think that this game would have played out the exact same had Cam Newton played. And what I mean by that is, insert Cam, and the Chiefs still play poorly, and maybe the Patriots win. I think the Chiefs would have gotten up to play Cam Newton and the Patriots, but meanwhile, they got Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham, and they played a little down to their opponent.
Jonathan Jones joining me for another moment or so. So, Jonathan, what about the Chiefs? For instance, was that a bad night for Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City offense, or did New England show something about how you can slow down that offense?
I don't know how you slow them down for 4 quarters, and what we saw in the first 2 weeks of the season, where we saw teams not wanting to blitz Patrick Mahomes, wanting to play off a little bit, and so Patrick Mahomes said, all right, I'm not going to show off my arm. I'm not going to throw it 50 yards down the field. I'm going to sort of dink and dunk. I'm going to throw at or around the line of scrimmage, 5 yards past the line, and let my fast, speedy pass catchers do the rest. That's what we saw in the first 2 weeks. Then what did the Baltimore Ravens try to do? They tried to send the house at Patrick Mahomes pretty regularly. He made them pay. It was biblical what he did to the Baltimore Ravens defense. So how do you guard Patrick Mahomes? What do you do? I know it's cliche, but he is a cheat code because it doesn't matter what you do. He has an answer for it. He's going to throw to wherever the blitz just came from. He can scramble away from you. He doesn't have to be necessarily the fastest guy, but he's the smartest guy on the field, and he has the arm strength along with it. So you add up those things, and then as well, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy have been scheming for him for the last several years. I don't know how you stop this Kansas City Chiefs offense.
Hey, Jonathan, quickly, you mentioned Cam Newton. You covered Cam in Carolina. So what do you make of how he's come into New England under very difficult circumstances in a really unusual offseason and the way he's fit into that offense and that locker room?
Yeah, I've been very impressed. I've been impressed with Josh McDaniels as well, who has been flexible with his scheme. I think that Cam has won over any number of people in that locker room. I was not at all concerned about him winning over people in the locker room, though. Guys love to play with Cam. And remember, I covered him in 2015 when he took that team to the Super Bowl and made Ted Ginn Jr. and Philly Brown and a bunch of other guys look like stars out there. So didn't matter who you were going to surround Cam with, all those guys are going to play up for Cam.
So one last thing, then. What about the other side of this? Tampa Bay lost to New Orleans in Week 1. Tom Brady looked pretty shaky. Folks want to dump on him. And what the Buccaneers were trying to do 3 weeks later. 3 weeks later, how did they look to you, and how does his arm look to you?
His arm looks absolutely fine to me, and I didn't really buy into, okay, his arm's dead. Now you ask me about Drew Brees and his arm, I'd say that it is probably shot. But Tom Brady absolutely has the arm strength, and he showed it off a couple of times last week. This is a Bucs team that looks like they didn't get enough practice, preseason reps and whatnot, as they had just come together. They look like a team that was practicing at a private Christian school in Tampa back in the summer. And, oh, what do you know? That's exactly what they were doing. Now you have the timing throws. Now he's figuring it out with Mike Evans. You saw Gronk have a big week last week. Now he's getting Cameron Brate involved. The running game's coming through. This team is starting to get into their rhythm. I can only imagine that they look like this the first week of October. If they can stay healthy, and of course an unfortunate injury to O.J. Howard, the Achilles, is going to keep him out for the year, but what they can look like in December into January.
Covering a lot of ground. He is a senior NFL reporter and an insider for CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. Also part of Tops on CBS Sports Network. Jonathan Jones, my guest. Jonathan, appreciate it so much. Great job.
Appreciate you.
You too, Jonathan. Well done. He's a pro. Jonathan Jones breaking down some NFL for you. Okay, let's get to hour number two. We had John Cooper. We had Jonathan Jones. We had me.